Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hi, friends, and welcome to the Papaya Podcast. I'm your hostess, trying her mostest, Sarah Nicole, and each week I'm going to be dishing out some sweetness mixed in with some seeds of wisdom or something like that. So get ready to get inspired, get candid, get real, because we are all in this digital space together.
All right. Okay, so to be completely fair, I just got out of like a high intensity traffic situation. Mm-hmm. So I am sitting down and decompressing and having the loveliest chat already with Miss Kenzie Brenna.
Hi.
Hi. Oh my gosh. So to give a little bit of a intro to how I found you, I don't even know if I've shared this with you before, but you were actually somebody who came up in my Explorer feed all the time. Oh. When I was like losing weight and I was like going through like my transformation stuff, the last thing I wanted to see was someone like you telling me that I could actually be okay in my body.
Oh yeah.
So I was like, no, like I can't listen to you. I kept looking at your posts and I was like ignoring it. I couldn't tap mm-hmm. into it because you were teaching something that felt so contradictory to what I was going through, because I was in such a season of self-hate and I was like, oh, I'm going to find happiness in this weight loss journey, all these things. And then I remember when I kind of came to like my crashing bottom mm-hmm. where I was 114 pounds and very underweight and still dealing with self-hate. And suddenly I was like, holy crap, this girl, you showed up on my feet again and you were like the wow. coziest blanket of like just safety, honestly, safety. And I have loved following you ever aww. Since. You're so great at how you approach everything, because I'm so flighty in the sense that I love just like, what am I feeling today? And what is this? And what is that? And you're like educational.
Oh, thank you.
No, like it's thank so you. Crazy. Like I've learned so much from you over the last like couple years, and totally one of the people that is like one of my big influences. So,
oh, wow. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And like, got to thank the Explore feed sometimes.
I know. Sometimes even aww. If I had to ignore you for a good yeah, year, absolutely. I finally, you cracked me down. Oh, you no. cracked me down.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing that. I really appreciate it. And I totally understand what you mean about hitting that rock bottom of losing weight, because that's also how I got started on
yeah.
the journey.
Yeah, how could you actually tap into that? I don't even think I've fully ever heard your like origin yeah. story. Yeah. I'd love to hear it. Oh,
yes, absolutely. So it was very similar to you. I was on a weight loss journey and I was documenting it online. And to be completely fair and transparent, the weight loss journey was mostly a positive one, in the sense that I gained a lot of community and I gained a sense of self, and I was trying to figure out who I was in weight loss, but also exploring myself online for the first time. So documenting my journey, that was something that was so new to me and something that has been so valuable since then. And I wouldn't have been able to start this journey if I didn't start that weight loss journey. So I have to be very transparent about that and be very honest about it.
No, I completely agree. Like I can't yeah. ever say that like weight loss was a bad thing.
Right.
It just was maybe not entirely what I expected it to be. And right, I think that's a yeah. story for a lot of people.
Yeah, that's a really great way of looking at it. For a lot of people, it leads to a lot of turmoil, and it leads to a lot of like anguish, and it doesn't lead to that love, that place of self-acceptance and self-fulfillment that we're looking for. But for a lot of people, it adds as almost it leverages you into another space. Maybe it shows you reflections of yourself that you didn't know existed before, and then you just have to thank that journey for just existing the way that it existed and then move on from it. And that's what happened with me. Was I hit a plateau. I hit a certain number, but I couldn't get below that number, which is so common in weight loss. Like, you lose a bunch and then all of a sudden your body's like, cool, I'm done losing weight. And I was freaking out. I couldn't believe that, you know, my body was going against me, and I started having a meltdown in a gym. And I went to the washroom and I was crying, and it was like one of those like ugly cries that I was like, I can't even hide this. I can't go out there. Like, people are gonna know that I'm crying and that I'm feeling so broken about my body, and I hate myself. I really hate myself in this mm-hmm. moment. And that I thought that hate was supposed to leave. Mm-hmm. I'm at a smaller size now. I thought I was supposed to get better, you know? And then I went on Instagram and I searched up a hashtag, and I can't remember if it was a hashtag self-acceptance or self-confidence, but I searched one of them, and I don't know what drove me to search them. But then all of the images that came up from that were these women sitting down, showing their bodies in ways that I had never, ever even remotely close seen before. And I was so shocked, and I didn't think that could exist. I honestly thought I was looking at something from a different universe. Like, that's how foreign it felt to me. And I was looking at them and I was scrolling, and I was so hijacked out of that moment that I stopped crying. And I don't want to say that I immediately felt better, but I was curious. And so I was able to leave the bathroom, go downstairs, grab my stuff, get home. And I just spent the entire night flicking through all of these accounts that were talking about body love and talking about eating disorder recovery and talking about weight loss, talking about stretch marks, cellulite, all of the stuff. And then there were some posts going deeper, talking about race, talking about disability, talking about accessibility. And I was so inspired, and I was just doing this big deep dive and consuming all of this information that I had never consumed before. And then the next day I took that inspiration and I was like, okay, fuck it, I'm doing it. Mm-hmm.
You can swear.
All right.
If we decide to bleep, we'll bleep. You go ahead. I don't think, you know, I debated that for a while, but I was like, I'm such a swearer, and I don't do it on Instagram, but I do it a lot in real life. So it's going to happen.
Yeah. I'm very pro linguistic freedom. So I do understand.
Go for it.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So I took that inspiration the next day, and I was like, you know, fuck it. I'm just going to sit down. And I was in leggings and I was in a sports bra and I was holding my cup of coffee. I'm like, I'm just going to take a picture of me sitting down. And I had never let, you know, an ex-boyfriend ever even see me in the light like that. And I was going to let a bunch of strangers online see me for the first time. And I did it. And I took the photo and then I put it up, and I was so nervous and excited. And I had this adrenaline about it. And I threw my phone on my bed and I said, I can't believe I just did that. What did I do? I've never done something so radical before. And it's not radical in the big, if you look at it in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't seem that radical, but it is. When we've been taught to hate ourselves for so long, taking that chance into self-acceptance is the 180 that you never thought could exist. And
I 100% agree. I always say, like, the second I'm scared out of my mind to post something, usually is like, this is important and this is the stuff you do.
Absolutely.
It's so scary, but like, there's something about vulnerability that it draws us. I talked about it before, being like almost like you're holding on to a secret, and the moment you kind of release it, it releases out of you as well, and it becomes like part of your healing. So that's so cool. And I did the same thing, like ditch the phone. Like, I can't believe I just did that.
I just shared the most private part of myself. Like, I can't believe I was this vulnerable with strangers, or just vulnerable with people who know me. Even being vulnerable with people who know me. But I have the exact same mindset that you do. That if something is really hard for me to post, I try to ask myself, okay, one, is it okay if I don't post this? Is this genuinely too hard for me right now? Is it okay that I give myself some space with this? Or is this something that's really important for me to post? Is this something that is an okay challenge for me? Should I dive into this and be raw and be vulnerable and talk about why it's really hard for me? And I tried to see and navigate and be honest with myself of where I am in those two categories. And most of the time I'm like, post it, girl. Post it, because like, you're going to be okay. And it's important that people hear about this, and it's important that people see this, because if you're thinking this and feeling this, you're not that much of a weirdo. There are other people that are thinking and feeling the exact same thing, and they need to know that they're seen and heard. And so yes. That's what I always think about. If the posts are really hard, they're hard for a reason. And there's always a reward at the end of the vulnerability train. You know, There's always such a big reward, whether that is community building or whether or not that's, you know, you figuring out a new part of yourself, being resilient. Like, those are invaluable. And so I always try to think, I'm like, okay, vulnerability is really hard, but absolutely worth it. But yeah, that's like the majority of how I started. And from there, from that one photo.
Yeah, you kind
of
blew up. From that one photo, I just haven't stopped. I've been like, okay, I'm addicted, guys. Now you guys have to see my cellulite and my stretch marks and like all of it. Yeah.
We're going to break it down piece by piece. Yeah,
but it got even more than just the cellulite and the stretch marks, because when I started talking about my self-harm scars and my mental health and stuff and diving into eating disorder recovery, I mean, those things were very, even more so than, you know, my body, those things were really, really, really hard for me to talk about because there's just so much stigma around me living in a slightly larger body and talking about having disordered eating patterns or talking about my mental health. You know, those things are very, very, very stigmatized. And I felt really uncomfortable sharing those, but those are also so important for me to share.
For sure. And it's funny because you actually went to, I don't even remember what it was, but you had in your stories, you were going to a lesson all about like disordered eating and eating disorders. Yeah. And I think I took more information away from like that series of stories than I have from anything on social media in a really long time. It was the first time I think that I truly, it's so funny, you say eating disorder like a million times over, but the second you switch the words and you say disordered eating, you're like, oh yeah, that's me. Oh, that makes so much more sense. Right. But can you talk about like, did you ever get diagnosed with an eating disorder?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So I got diagnosed with body image disorder. It's called body dysmorphic disorder. Okay. And it was back in 2013 or 2014. I was getting therapy at a hospital actually, because I walked into a doctor's office and I just told a random doctor, like a walk-in clinic, I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I'm walking around the city. I was kind of in this liminal state of, I'm not ending my life, but I can't be here. Also, and I feel like a lot of people, I don't even want to say a lot, but I feel like people have been there where they're walking around aimlessly, not feeling worthy, not feeling valuable, not feeling like they're meaningful here. But at the same time, you know, death isn't an option. I don't know.
That's not too foreign to me. That's actually a lot of people will ask, like, when did I know the point in which I was going to leave my marriage? And I say, like, the day that I woke up and I was upset that I woke up. And that was such a weird, I was like, oh, I wasn't wishing for death, but I was somehow disappointed that I woke up. And it was like this foreign, I wasn't suicidal, but I just didn't want to be alive.
It was weird.
it didn't really, I'd never heard of that before. And I wasn't self-harming and didn't really make a lot of sense. But it was like in that moment that I knew if I didn't leave and do something to kind of change my life, my kids were going to grow up without a mother, whether that was like me becoming a shell of myself or me actually not surviving it.
Yes.
So I think that that's so interesting you say that, because I think when we talk about like mental health and suicidal thoughts, it often sounds like it is a self-harm step. And sometimes it's just like a numbing, like a void.
Yes, absolutely. Like it's too much out there and I just need to cover myself right now. I just need to completely be internal. I can't be sensitive to any of this.
Right.
And so when I went into the doctor's office, I had a very stereotypical, like, the doctor was very cold. He was asking me, you know, invasive questions, needed medical questions, but they were invasive and I didn't feel like answering them, but I had to. And then I was sent to get therapy in a local hospital and I'm really grateful that I was there. But I didn't talk about my eating because I didn't think that it was disordered enough. I thought that you had to be underweight to have an eating disorder, so I never brought it up.
Huge misconception.
Now
we know.
Yeah. And I'm so glad that that's something that is so powerful about social media is that the eating disorder community, more and more people are talking about the fact that it's not just a thin white woman's disease. Mm-hmm. It is a mental illness that has no bias on anybody. Every single person, man, woman, non-gender conforming, black, white, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You can be affected by it. And that's something that's really important to talk about always, because if a person has, you know, disordered eating patterns, when do they really start having an eating disorder? And for me, it's like, shouldn't we just be addressing all of it all the time, you know? So then that way a person might not even reach the stage of mental illness or reach the stage where they are really struggling with their mental health and really struggling with their day-to-day eating and stuff,
right.
You know? We should just be talking about the disordered eating just in general, just what is normal eating patterns and how do we get past this whole like diet culture and trying to control our eating and trying to just control wanting to be weighing less and
yes.
and taking up less space, you know? So I wasn't ever diagnosed with the eating disorder. Mm-hmm. I was diagnosed with the body image one, because I'd never brought up the eating thing. I
right.
never brought it up. We talked a lot about self-harm. We talked a lot about the body image thing. Cause at that point I was covering up, mirrors I didn't have a full length mirror, but I was covering up my bathroom mirror and I was covering up mirrors in the hall because I couldn't see my body. And like, I just,
whoa.
Yeah, I wasn't okay with anything. And I was wearing like turtlenecks.
And this
in the
is before you started posting vulnerably or
yeah.
during?
No,
okay.
Before. Yeah. I was wearing like turtlenecks in the summertime and like hats to cover my face. And I wasn't wearing makeup. Like it was a very hard, difficult time. And it was very difficult for me to be with my boyfriend because, yeah. oh my God, the idea of him touching me just was like, you know, totally out of the question and painful almost, you know,
yeah.
like I don't
you kind of strip yourself from intimacy.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So eventually, I think about a year and a half or 2 years after that is when I found the weight loss community online. And mm-hmm. then that led to the body image and talking about all of the stuff. Yeah.
That's incredible. Like it's so crazy. And like, okay, so you kind of come across everything instead of being, yeah, like where, why? Oh, I don't even know how to ask this question.
Yeah.
What made you want to dive so deeply into the education side of it?
Yeah, great question.
Because like, I feel like we talk about things on social media and often we talk without really knowing and we're journeying through it. But you kind of like come in with like just so much groundwork that you've put in. Like you've really invested into understanding a lot of this stuff. Is that kind of because you, has it been for your own self-healing or has it been more because you are now understanding that you do have this presence and this influence or is it both?
Great question. One, I would like to commend you as well, because I think that even though maybe you're not maybe you don't think that, you know, you're explicitly educating people, but you are just by example, you know, you're educating
right.
people on how to be one of the most incredible humans ever. And, you know, just by
scary.
Being transparent.
I think it's like, again, like it's that imposter syndrome. I don't want to talk about
right.
something that I
right.
don't fully know.
Right.
And like,
absolutely.
Especially when it comes to things like, you know, every once in a while I'll talk about like white privilege and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. people are like, thank you for saying that. I'm like, thank you. Like, I'm just kind of learning it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm just mm-hmm. kind of in a space of like grasping it. And I
right.
still want it. Like, and sometimes you feel guilty about it. You don't really know how to like come into the space in such mm-hmm. a way that's like grace-filled as a white woman who still is like, I know both of us are still relatively thin. We're still like within the norms.
Totally, yeah.
So it's hard to be the people who are somewhat advocating for our own bodies, knowing that there's people who are struggling with much bigger things.
Totally.
And it makes you, for me, it makes me feel like really small sometimes. But you've kind of taken
totally.
It and you've taken the information and you've empowered it into other people.
Mm-hmm.
How have you gotten the confidence? Like, is it through education that's kind of like helped you with that?
Right. Yeah, totally. Yeah, great question. So, okay. So after Trump got elected, I promise this will link back. After Trump got elected, I was engaging in a lot of debates online,
mm-hmm.
Debates about, I mean, just basic human rights with people who are deeply conservative and people who held alternative beliefs to me. And I remember they were saying some stuff in the debate and I didn't have an answer for it, but I knew that they were wrong. And I just thought to myself, like, this was right after you got elected. I just thought to myself, I'm like, okay, you need to know all of the facts always about whatever subject you're going into. You need to know what you're talking about because it's important. This education is really important. And from then on, I started to just make sure that I'm engaging in educational content online and trying to make sure that it's accessible to my community. And I try to be very transparent that knowledge is finite. No, you know, the amount of knowledge that you have is finite. So you're going to be wrong a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And that is just, that is something that we all have to be okay with.
Totally.
Because the idea that I can talk about a subject and fully know about it, it will never happen. There's always growing information. There's always new things to learn. You know, not knowing is infinite. Knowing is finite. And so I always try to remember that even if I talk about something to do with eating disorders or the brain or something to do with social sciences or
yeah, sometimes you just talk about the moon. Like yeah, I've seen you just like geek out on like outer space.
Right. Yeah. If I decide to talk about like how awesome Saturn is.
Yeah.
If I try to talk, I also know that, you know, if I post something and somebody's like, actually, you're kind of wrong about that. I'm like, of course I am.
Because I am.
I don't have all of the information at all ever. And that's part of, I think, being a good educator is knowing that all of the information's incomplete, you know?
That honestly is such a relief because I think that a lot of times I fear talk myself out of talking about certain things because I'm so scared of like coming off wrong.
Oh, totally.
Especially when it comes to like social issues and stuff because like even, I don't know, like I'll say fully, like you are one of those people that approaches it with so much grace because like I even have a faith base and you talk about being an atheist and every single time you bring up like belief systems, I'm always like, huh, like you're doing it right because I never feel anything less. I feel like it's actually a respectful conversation.
Oh my gosh,
that is such a new thing on social media. Yeah. I think so many people are struggling in the space of social media and getting into this like right and left and all these different debates and you kind of lose the sense of, you know, being respectful on a platform in which you can't see somebody's face and you can't see their eyes.
So
and
easy. Yeah.
It's so easy. Do you deal with trolling?
A little bit.
I just feel like that would be so hard to troll you. You're so nice.
Thanks, girl. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Not
likewise.
Everybody is.
I haven't dealt with trolling in a while, to be completely honest. I used to get it a lot more, and it was really hard for me when that was happening, having like a lot of men come onto your page and be friends with each other and try to like just say really crude and crass things. But it hasn't happened anymore, and I try to remember myself that there are fat women that are posting their bodies online who are talking about their lives in whatever way. Maybe it's their mental health, maybe it's their body, maybe it's their sex, like, but it's whatever. They're just talking about themselves or they're talking about anything that they desire. And people will make Reddit forums about them and try to find out their addresses and try to dox them. And I think of that in comparison to the trolling that I've had, and I haven't had anything remotely close to that, you know? And that is just, that is harassment and violence on another level. And so if I have to go through a couple of trolls to, you know, deter them away from anybody else, I'll absolutely take it because that is just horrific. That's terrifying.
It is. It's also like, it's so funny because I've been hearing a lot more people talking about, you know, porn culture in the sense of like how it's influenced men in the sense of, I don't like, obviously there's a lot, like most of my troll comments come in from men as well.
Right.
And I'm starting to recognize that a lot of it comes from the fact that they've created this society and they're growing up in this culture where they have this idealized type of woman so that they start reflecting those opinions onto the women of their lives. The women of their lives start covering up. People like us start becoming more and more isolated. And then all you see out on the beaches or out on social media are this one form that men felt accepting of. And then we started to push back because there was somebody, I think it was Naomi Wolf or something, said something about how oftentimes like a lot of this and what we're doing is actually just like what I think men are kind of reacting to is a form of oppression and just like not seeing that there is another form of beauty and taking like, sometimes when I remind myself about that, because there's part of us, I think that at the end of the day, we'll always want to be attractive and it's an intimate and it can kind of rip that away from us when we feel like we're not accepted in our own bedrooms.
Oh my God. Absolutely.
That we can't have like that intimacy. And it's a question that I'm asked a lot. Like, how do you be intimate when you're struggling with like how you see your body and stuff like that? Yeah. And sometimes it's like reminding them that, you know what, like in the most cases, even though I know there's a lot of men who are still creating like these judgments out there, they're also coming from a place of like unawareness. They have no idea the culture that has like been set for women and how much that's put a pressure on us. And then it's caused us to like wear our t-shirts in the bedroom and it stripped both men and women from intimacy.
Absolutely.
It's created an entirely different world. And I feel like now we're swinging back a little bit. And I think that even though it's hard,
one of the things I keep thinking about is if we keep being vulnerable and keep mm-hmm. stepping out boldly with our bodies as we are, even if we're changing, even if we're like going through stuff, that it's not only teaching us that we're worthy, but it's showing men a different side of beauty. And we're like, have to almost like reteach the society mm-hmm. of what is, you yeah, know, okay.
That's so true.
But it's so true. So weird. It's yeah, so weird yeah. to even like go there and mm-hmm. like think about that. And I'm, you know, I'm watching so many changes in a lot of women kind of like identifying like with their hair, like mm-hmm. cutting their hair off and knowing that like, you know, that's not their sexuality. Having, mm-hmm. if they suffer from breast implant illness and removing them, that it's not their sexuality. Totally. And you yeah. start to like free yourself from all of these yeah. ties that we felt connected to for so long.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The amount of social conditioning that goes into what we find beautiful, because beauty is both, you know, to say that it's completely, to say that beauty is a social construct isn't true, because we find things like we're biological animals. So of course we're going to have certain desires or just certain attractions to things that might not even be necessarily conscious. You know, we might right. just think something is attractive or good looking or appealing to us, but really if we get closer to it, if we start, you know, interacting with it, not so much, you know?
Right.
And so half, some of that is biological. Some of it is cultural, and, mm-hmm. and we don't talk enough about that. What we find culturally beautiful here, totally different than what they find totally. In different parts of the world. And that's a very big, big, big distinction to make. Context is very important of
that's so what is true.
Contextually beautiful here versus in other parts of the world. Being intimate and having poor body image is so difficult to manage. It is yes. something that is very painful, and I've been there, and mm-hmm. it is something when you want to be sexually active with somebody and you're like, I just have to pretend like I don't have a body. I just have to be into it. I just have to be into it so much. It is so hard. And I think that the only way to really get over that is to go through it. You yes. just have to
immersion therapy. Yeah. My mom always tells me that. When I was scared to drive on highways, like the best thing to do is just go and drive on the yeah. highway. I was like, dang it.
Yeah. And you want there to be an easier way where you want to tell someone, you're like, here's a quote that helped me. It'll just take away all of your fears. And it's like, that is a part of it, but you really just have to go through it and communicate, and you have to have a lot of grit through it. And you just mm-hmm. have to know that through the communicating, and as unsexy as that sounds, you'll get to the sexy part. You know what I mean?
100%.
Keep going no matter what. And it's difficult to trust that, because we've been taught that, you know, you're just supposed to show up and you're just supposed to be this like vixen that just all of a sudden in the bedroom, super confident, I can do whatever. I'm basically a porn star, you know, yeah. like all of the, yeah. the thoughts that run through your head. But then you show up and the most of the time your partner is also deeply uncomfortable. I mean, the amount of sexual dysfunction in cisgendered men is climbing. It's only gotten higher and higher and higher. And that's interesting. And you wonder why. And it could be stress from the roles that they're placed in, the yes. gender roles that they're placed in. It could be the porn that they're watching, and then being nervous to be with a real woman or man is all of a sudden terrifying. Their body image is so low too. The amount of guys that I'm friends with that I have a lot of guy friends, but the amount of them that have body image issues and yes. that have even fucked up eating patterns.
Yeah.
I'm like, how did we think that this was just a women's issue? And I mean it largely is, and
I think it's like one of those things where it comes like in the tier of like even you and I, we know yeah. we're like on the lower end of like need and stuff, but we're still people totally. And we still have like, it's not the, somebody said to me the other day, it's not the pain Olympics, we're not in it, like yeah, they still yeah. are suffering, they're yes. still having yeah, things going yeah. on, and they're just doing it in their own way, and they maybe don't have as many steps to go through right, as right. us or the people above us and mm-hmm. like all of these different, you know, cultures and stuff mm-hmm, like that, and all mm-hmm. the things that they go through, but they're still going through it.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Absolutely.
But I also find like when I met my husband, it's so funny because like he is like the epitome of what I'm attracted to. Mm-hmm. And for me, a lot of my own confidence within my own body, like as it slowly went, because like to be fair, in the beginning, I literally wore a t-shirt like through everything. Right, of course, I couldn't. Like yeah, it was just yeah. so weird for me. I felt so.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think a lot of it came from like having a postpartum body and
of course, yeah.
They weren't his children. I felt very mm-hmm. apologetic for that. Even mm-hmm. though he'd never placed that on me, I kind of placed it mm-hmm. on myself. It was really weird, like dating and going through all of that. And anyways, absolutely. But I remember one time I was at a bar and a guy grabbed my hand and he ran it down his stomach of abs and he's like, do you like that? And I was like, no, I don't.
Right.
But that's all. And it kind of woke me up because I was like, that's all we see. That's mm-hmm. all we see in the magazines and the movies and the TV mm-hmm. shows mm-hmm. is this like very stereotypical type of guy. And of course, like they're not held to the same norms, but at the same time, they're not presented very well. They're not represented very well.
Yeah.
I've actually just started following some like body image men yeah, who are really yeah. talking out about it too, because you know, coming through that and seeing my husband who has like a quote unquote dad bod,
right,
that's 100% what I'm attracted to,
right.
So I yeah. had to kind of own that and be like, why am I placing on him what I'm assuming he's attracted to,
yeah,
based on what so I'm great. Seeing in society,
yeah,
when he's actually telling me every single day that he, like, it's so funny because when we first met, we were coworkers, when we first mm-hmm. met, it was at my lowest weight, mm-hmm. so then we're dating and I'm in this like getting healthier mentally, mm. physically, I'm gaining weight, and it was yeah. a weird curve.
Yeah.
And he never commented. Never. No. To this day, he doesn't comment on my body. He just tells me I'm beautiful.
Oh,
doesn't make amazing. Those comments. But I realize now that's not the story for everybody. So
yeah.
do you have, like, I don't even know if you have any advice, but having so many guy friends and stuff, yeah. have you had those discussions on, you know, what happens when a woman is commented on her body by somebody that she's intimate with? Is mm-hmm. there like tools to kind of work through that? Because a lot of them just like shell up, and a lot of them are in these longer term relationships, yeah. or they've just had a baby.
Right.
Now they're postpartum, and their yeah. husbands are putting on this pressure for them to bounce back to something.
Oh my gosh.
When that's like literally that's the last thing that they should yeah. be worrying about.
Yeah, specifically for moms, it's like, you know, your body just created consciousness. I mean,
yeah.
that is literally something that you don't even see anywhere else in our solar system, let alone we don't even
wow,
know if that
really
exists
powerful.
We don't even know if it exists anywhere else in the universe, right? I mean, like, probably, but wow, you created, there was at one point nothing, and then you created something that is a really incredible thing for a body to do, and
yeah.
and I think that taking away that process and stripping it back to just how does your body look, I think is radically oversimplifying the beautiful thing that you just did.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that is taking away the magic of your connection to your child and the connection to the process of what just happened. And for the women who might be listening to this that, you know, are trying to conceive and that potentially can and that are going
yes.
through other methods of just having children, it's the exact same thing.
Yes.
It's the exact same thing. And the even the mind process that it takes to just have a child, to bear a child,
oh,
to
yeah.
just
step
to just,
outside of
oh
yourself,
my God, to become a parent, Jesus,
to freaking care for things. I literally
totally.
Cried for 3 hours yesterday because my son had like, he got diagnosed with a learning disability, and it freaking tanked me. And I was like, sometimes you forget because it's so fun. Sometimes you forget
right.
like how much comes with it and how emotionally tied we are to them. But like to your point about like whether they're in a stage of trying to conceive or adopt or anything like that, you know, I watched Shane struggle just as much as being a parent, and they're not blood tied to him at all.
Right. Yeah.
And I even look at like my best friend who mm-hmm. is like just a support to us in
yeah.
like raising those kids. Like, I mean, it's such an amazing thing that we are in a society
Absolutely.
Where we are actually the educators and the leaders and the guides to like
yeah.
these little humans.
Yeah.
And we're going to
yeah.
like potentially change the fabric of society and what they experience. You know,
right.
social media for us, I think we kind of got thrown into
mm-hmm.
the gauntlet of like
mm-hmm.
everything going on. And it was all very new. You know, we started with ICQ and then we went to like
right.
Facebook
ICQ.
And now we have
oh,
ICQ.
Gosh. Yeah,
right?
I love it.
I love it. And then
MySpace.
All those like really emotional photos that we
yeah.
put in, like
yeah.
our selfies in a mirror that were
mm-hmm.
all of our images on MySpace. But
yeah,
the kids are coming through like we're like, I think a lot of us now, we kind of grew up through it.
Yeah.
Now we're like, holy crap, we need to change this before the kids
right,
come
right,
back into
yeah.
this.
We need to be very mindful of our digital infrastructure, because I like to think that we have our physical environmental world that we're living in, right? Where, you know, we toss a ball and it'll always come down, where we always know that we're living in a 3D dimension. Like, it's just this physical world operates on certain rules. The digital world, however, operates on totally different rules. And we're affected by
True.
That environment the same way that we're infected by our physical environment. And I think that we need to be very mindful of, hey, what does the digital environment look like? Is it actually making me feel good? Is it making me feel safe? Is it making me feel productive? Is it making me feel all of these things? But we are so easily able to become, you know, addicted to our screens and addicted to being online. And that's part of our biology. You know, we like fast moving pictures. We like screens. We like things that pop out at us. We like seeing cat videos and food videos. We like all of those things. And when the internet is littered with those, we can oftentimes become distracted. And instead of using social media, or instead of using our phones or our computers as a tool of construction, it becomes a tool of destruction, you know, where all of a sudden it is producing bad effects on us. And so I always try to think of, how am I helping change the landscape of the digital environment? How are we creating a good infrastructure for our children? So talking about things like media literacy, talking about things like, is this body real or is it not real? You know, because they're going to be involved in media, and soon, you know, they're going to be looking at images and wondering, well, my body doesn't look like that. How come? How is that okay? Is it okay that my body doesn't look like that? Or, wow, all of these people are posting pictures of them, you know, being happy on their travels, and I'm not happy where I am. Does that mean that I'm not good enough, or should I be doing something different, or how come they can do that and I can't? And so I think that the more I always come back to this, even the question about how to be intimate with a partner, always coming back to just valuing honesty and transparency. Those types of things, I think, are going to be radical value makers in the next world that we're living in, you know?
I so agree. And I think that being genuine and honest in a space that is like almost been built on a facade is so powerful. Yes. And I think that we kind of got to this time now where we crave it. We crave it. We want reality. Mm-hmm. And not like reality, like reality TV. We want reality. We want real grit. We want those vulnerable moments from people, because we're feeling we have all this community and all this accessibility available to us, and we're feeling so alone in it.
Exactly. And I'm always saying that we were in the culture of, you know, if we were in the culture of the Kardashians, where like, okay, they had a reality TV show, but how real were they really being? And you know, they have changed the face of the way that we look at our body, and the way that we look at our faces with makeup, and the way that we look at ourselves with our partners and our lifestyles and stuff. And there's going to be a counterculture to that. And I'm definitely, you know, part of the idea that, okay, we were in this one phase for a while, but now we're going into the phase of transparency, where it's not just enough to just put like a sweet smile up and to say like, I'm doing this today and I'm doing that today. Like, people want to know, like, what are the deep, dark moments of your life, and how can I relate to you? Because we're floating around in a world that might be aesthetically pleasing, but am I relating to this thing that I think is cool looking? Am I relating to this person that I'm following, you know, their travel journey on? Am I actually relating to them? Are they affecting my life? Am I thinking about them when I'm off the phone? You know, how inspired am I by the people that I'm surrounding myself with in this digital environment? I always think about those things. And I think about you in times that I'm having a hard moment with my body or a hard moment in my life. I'm like, what would Sarah do in this situation?
Like, I do the same thing. Cause like, sometimes it's like, whenever I feel very small about something, I'll often be like, okay, Kenzie's usually somebody who has like something really good about this, and I'll like scroll your feed, and usually you have something educational. I'm like, okay, that's like, it's like a black hole for me when it comes to you, because you're so good at it.
Thanks, girl.
It's so crazy. But like, you're so well spoken, and I think that does come back into like, you're genuinely, you care about putting out things. Like, I think a lot of us, you step onto social media and even into like the influencer space, and it became all about like, what can I get out of this? Mm-hmm. Like, I can do this, and it's going to give me this advancement, and we're going to be able to do that. And at some point it switches for a lot of us where we start to go, wait, what can I offer this? Right. What can I bring to the table? We do need to have that support. And honestly, it's quite lovely when brands come alongside and they're like, we really love your messaging. How can we support you in this space?
Yeah.
Let's work together and have those conversations. So I'm done being guilty about that exchange, but I'm honestly very rigid about it too. Like, I won't take on things that doesn't feel good to me.
Yes, absolutely.
I will say like the same for you. I've seen like you've done some ads and stuff before and they're so seamless. Like, you don't, it's you. It's still you. You're just talking about something. Yeah. I've seen you talk about a number of different things, and it's actually such a lovely experience.
Yeah.
What would you say to people who are still suffering from like the social media fog and like kind of struggling through these changes? What would your recommendation to them be in order to honor like their mental health?
Yeah, totally. I definitely think that going on what I call like a social media diet is really important. So stripping, so the same way that you kind of would cut bad foods out of your life, I think that you would cut people out that aren't serving a purpose to you. So going through who you're following and making sure that you're following people that, one, that you can relate to, but two, that inspire you, and three, that challenge you.
Yes,
you know?
The challenge one is huge.
Totally. And I'm not talking about challenge you in the sense that, like, they're living a different lifestyle, and so every time you see their photo, you're feeling, like, challenged to, you know, get over this whole, I'm feeling worthless. I'm not talking about that type of challenge. I'm talking about the challenge of, are they putting up educational content that's making you think twice about the world around you?
Like, think of Rachel Cargill. And I both love her.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So powerful.
Absolutely. Oh my God,
she makes
incredible.
Me so uncomfortable, and I love
right,
it.
Yeah.
She makes me so, and she, yeah. I always thought that. I was like, man, she makes me so uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Just for those who are listening, she has this incredible feed that's very educational about people of color and mm-hmm. kind of like what their rights are. And at one point she kind of like, she says things so boldly, and I'm so envious because I'm like such an apologetic human. Mm-hmm. But at one point she was this like, if you are a white woman, this is not your space to comment. Like, this is mm-hmm. a space that I've created for people of color, but please sit and listen. And mm-hmm. then she said another time, if this makes you uncomfortable, good. Mm-hmm. And I've really started to own that feeling because I know that it's challenging me into being better in this space and being somebody that's, instead of just being scared, like, I don't know what this is and I'm so scared of offending anybody that
right.
I'm just going to back away to my little corner
right, yeah.
and only follow people that, you know, yeah, work in that in world that, space, that make
yeah.
me feel safe and make me feel understood.
Yeah.
I want to understand the other side of it. And it's been
so
important
good.
To me lately, just even following accounts that are dealing with stuff that I would never deal with.
Yes.
A lot of like the
yes.
LGBTQ families,
yes.
a lot of infertility accounts like
right,
I'm following because I'm
right.
like, you know, we forget sometimes. We often go into social media as a space where like, what can we pull away from it? What
mm-hmm.
can we take and go home? And it should be that. It should be a good experience. Like, you're
mm-hmm.
right. Like, when we're following the right people,
mm-hmm.
it becomes a better experience for us. But when we're following the right people, too, it should make us better support systems
oh,
for others.
Absolutely.
And that is a bigger deal than I really ever understood. I think, like, I was somebody who grew up. My mom had a history of an eating disorder. My sister had a history with an
mm-hmm.
eating disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And here I was going through a weight loss thing.
Yeah.
And I was talking about calories like they were nothing. Like
right.
I was so desensitized to it because it was what was going on with me. And I was like, but I'm empowering myself and
mm-hmm.
da, 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 da.
Mm-hmm.
Totally forgetting what somebody else is potentially going through. So
mm-hmm.
it is, and even the same way about like talking about fertility and stuff like that, when you start to understand how devastating it can be to just like flippantly talk about
right.
certain things,
yeah.
it kind of brings you into an awareness, or when you realize that there's stuff going on in the world that has nothing to do with you. It
yes.
is so outside of your bubble.
Yes.
But you're maybe one of the only people that can really talk about it. Like, even when
yeah.
you think about feminism as a whole,
mm-hmm.
And like that swing that women have gone through to kind of push, it's been also because the men who are standing in front with the women
right.
holding open
it's
the door.
Everyone.
So
it's
sometimes
everyone.
It's taking
yeah.
the people of privilege
yeah.
to kind of step back and make those
right.
changes for us and
absolutely.
With us. So on social media, it's
mm-hmm.
so important to me to like, to just make sure I'm following people that are creating that awareness change.
Totally. Oh yes. It's so important.
It's so weird.
Yes, absolutely. Diversity in your perspective is so important. So following those different accounts, like accounts that you know are making you look at the world in a different way. So following a disability activist, say for example,
yes.
you know, people who are talking about accessibility in ways that we would never we as able-bodied people might never be thinking of, you know,
yeah.
the same way that, you know, a person who has been on a weight loss journey might come to our page and feel so educated and feel, wow, I never even thought
yeah.
of the fact that this was socially conditioned into me, that I would need to take up less space in the world. That same realization, that same
right.
feeling is what we're going to get from other accounts too that are talking about different avenues of life, different
it's
intersections.
Growth.
And it's, oh, totally. And the more diversity that you have in your perspective, the more holistic a picture gets for you, the more that you're understanding the system that we live in, the more that you're understanding the world. That understanding, again, is invaluable. You know, that being able to understand, wow, the building that I was in today didn't have an accessibility ramp. How would I be able to host an event here and make sure that I could say everybody could come? Or the event that we had today didn't do a land acknowledgement. How would Indigenous people feel like being seen and heard? Little stuff like that, when you start having more and more people talk to you about their experiences or more and more people talk to you about these intersections, they just create... they're just adding to the whole picture. And the whole picture is really important for us to step back and look at. And so I always think that it's just powerful to listen, to learn, to observe,
yes.
to try to do something with that. As privileged people, I always think, okay, now that I have this information, what can I do with it? What can how do I help facilitate change? How do I either get out of the way or get in the way of somebody else to help facilitate change?
That's so cool. Cause like it's honestly something that's kind of just popped into my consciousness in the last like 6 months even, mm-hmm. because I did this challenge where I was just asking, people were coming up with the exact same things all the time, talking about their bodies, talking about like what they struggled with. And they kept saying the same thing over and over. It was always their stomachs. And I was like, it's so weird that we're so, I don't know, that's like for women, it's where we naturally carry weight. It's where it changes the most over time, especially if you're carrying children, whatever age, like hormones, everything. Your stomach is like usually the one that takes the biggest amount of like ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
So I decided to do something about that. And I want to show these women because they'd often been sending me pictures just to me. And I was like, I would love for you guys, just send me pictures of your stomachs. And I'm going to create a collage to show you each other.
So beautiful.
It was amazing. I had hundreds of people who sent their photos in. Yeah. I did like the first 90, however many I was allowed in like the slideshow. Mm-hmm. And it was such a gripping thing. Like there was women with colostomy bags and like huge scars and like endometriosis, like surgeries and just major like cancer and just stretch marks and people who had gone through like weight loss journeys and just so many different diverse bodies. And people were like, holy crap, this was crazy.
Yeah.
I have never seen my stomach on anybody else before. This is amazing. And then there came a couple comments that were like, where are all the women of color? And I was like, what are you talking about? Like there are some, like there's like three or four, but like it's not my fault that they didn't submit the photos. Like I asked everybody and they didn't send them in. It's not my fault. That was my initial reaction. And then I was continuing the conversation on with a couple of these women that had brought it up, and I was noticing they're not like activist type people. They weren't attacking me. They were just challenging that question. And I was like, huh, interesting. Okay. So you tell me what it is that you think like I should have done differently.
Right.
And the one girl said to me, and I'll never forget it, she was like, ask yourself why they didn't submit their photos.
Right.
And I was like, okay, why didn't they submit their photos? She's like, are you in their community? Mm-hmm. Are you there? Are you present? Are you active? Are you even following them? I was like, well, I probably only follow like three.
Right.
And it just woke me up that I was literally following people that look like me because I was becoming so selfish about my experience because I was like, oh, I'm in such a needy space. I just want to follow people that I relate to.
Yeah.
Instead of recognizing that I was not tapped into that community whatsoever.
Right.
And I literally followed up with like, holy crap, like, thank you for bringing that up. Like, thank you for saying those things. Everyone recommended a lot of different accounts, and now following them, it's changed my awareness like crazy. And it's changed like the thing I've said to other brands, like, is there representation there? I think brands are a lot of times scared of like making the wrong move too, but like sometimes it's like, hey, we just want to make sure that whoever's taking in this content feels like they could be represented in that as well. And there are culturally diverse, very different things. And a lot of women of color have said to me that in their cultures, it's just not a thing to deal with cellulite and stretch marks. It's so accepted in their culture. Yeah, and for us, it's not. And like you were saying, that different parts of the world. So eye-opening to me that we've had such a different experience focusing on these like little tiny things where they've got like way bigger fish to fry. They don't really care about their stretch marks. So powerful.
Absolutely. We definitely struggle in different ways.
The for
pain
sure
that we cause here, the beauty standards that we're trying to achieve, that we're like jumping over like loops and files and trying to, you know, do whatever in order to get to, totally different in
another part
of the world. You airdrop myself, like, you know, into a country where it's predominantly, you know, women of color, and they're mostly bigger women, or they don't have media. I had a friend that lived in Tanzania, and she's a white woman. She lived in Tanzania for 4 or 5 years, and her body image, she's had some disordered eating and she's had poor body image. And she lived there, and when she was there with her partner, she realized eventually that, wow, there's no advertisement here. Like, I don't have poor body image anymore.
Wow.
And they're always telling me that they're always commenting on the fact that I'm skinny. I'm thin, but I never felt that, even though technically she was in our culture, in our society, she never felt that way. But over there, it was very apparent that she was thinner, and thinner in the community meant almost that you could potentially be sick. So if you were bigger, it represented wealth and it represented health. And it was just the representations of being bigger here means that you probably are mostly low income, mostly don't know how to eat, are out of control, eating bad foods. Like, those are the ideas, those are the stigmas that we have on fat people. And when I say, just for your listeners, just in case if maybe they haven't engaged with any of my stuff or anything in my space, when we say the word fat, we're not, it's not a slur, it's not a pejorative. It's used as a social term to describe people who are objectively fat, who are taking back the word, who are embracing the word. So I just want to let your listeners know.
That's really
know
cool, that, actually. I didn't really know that.
Yeah. So it's not, I'm not saying that in a way that that is
it's
insulting.
Not a derogatory. No. It's actually an empowering
word. Yeah, yeah.
That's
and
really
I,
cool.
And I respect women that also don't want to use that word because it's been a way to disempower them. You know, it still makes, so I float between, you know, bigger women and fat women and interchangeably, but I just wanted to give your listeners
No, I think that's really cool. Speaking of word and language though, when you and I first met, we were having dinner together and I said something about like the body positive movement and you were like, oh, I actually don't prefer that term.
Yeah.
Tell me about that, because that's the first time I like talking about awareness and challenging thoughts.
Yeah.
It has been very standard to say that as like a blanket statement for things, but you kind of come with a different awareness about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that term has been around for tens of years. Like 30 years, going on 40 years, I think. And it has a couple of places where it originated. It originated in the queer community. It originated in the fat community. It originated in the eating disorder community. So it's kind of had this growth over the last 30 years, and it is a political statement. It isn't a literal term for body positivity, which is, again, awesome. Be positive about your body. Yep. Love it. However, in a social political space, body positivity is used to help represent marginalized bodies and to uplift oppression. It's very similar to the phrase like body liberation. And so body positivity comes from those types of spaces.
That's its roots, basically.
Yes, that's its roots. And so as somebody that is privileged, and you know, and I'm privileged and I definitely still struggle, but I do have an enormous amount of privilege. I took myself out of using that phrase because I want to use that phrase only when it's appropriate for those communities, you know? So when I'm talking about marginalized fat bodies, when I'm talking about marginalized disabled bodies or marginalized queer bodies, I want to be able to use that slogan, that phrase for them, because the body positive movement is for them. And it really did get co-opted by, and you know, I love brands that are trying to be diverse. I think it's incredible, but it really did get co-opted by thinner white women.
Yeah.
And if you and I were in a space where we were talking about body love and we started seeing girls who haven't, and I love all body. I just want to caveat, or just want to give a warning to this. That I love all bodies, but there is a big distinction to make here. If we started seeing girls who don't have a shred of cellulite, who don't have any stretch marks or loose skin, start talking about their roles and start talking about their bodies, you want them to be empowered to do that. And you also want them to be able to say, but I live in a widely accepted body, whereas there are other women who look like me, but they live in a slightly different body, like Sarah and Kenzie, and their struggles are different than mine. Just making that comparison, being able to say there's a difference here and I'm acknowledging it, is more empowering than just empowering yourself.
Yes.
When you empower yourself and empower other people, that's the type of community that I want to live in. So I want to be able to empower myself while also not taking up space in other communities, while also not taking away from shining the spotlight on queer, fat, black women for the amazing humans that they are and for all of the representation that they deserve.
Yeah.
So I want to be able to talk about what I'm talking about online, but without co-opting that space, and be able to be an example for that too. Because too often times I think that brands are taking stuff that you know, maybe a disabled community created, and then they're thinking like, oh, okay, cool, we'll just have somebody in a wheelchair, but then we won't follow up with the fact that all of the events that we host have no accessibility ramps, that they don't have any people who are signing. They have nobody there to actually help accessibility.
It becomes a marketing tool instead of an actual social change.
Yeah. And it's like, guys, come on, for our future, for our kids, for the people that currently are struggling right now. Let's do this. Let's not be afraid. Let's dive in. Let's really be change makers.
Yeah. And even if it's like little baby steps and little tiny conversations and asking questions, but totally. I think that's really cool. And I actually didn't know your whole reasoning. So what wording do you use when you talk about it?
I talk about body love and body confidence. Okay. And I love try that. And mental health. I try to just say that those are the three things that I focus on. And then if body positivity comes up, I try to talk about more intersectionality that comes with it.
That's really cool. Okay. So we're like about to be kicked out of this space.
Okay. I could talk with you for hours.
I know. I feel like that. I knew that was going to be the problem, but like it still happened.
Yeah.
Okay. Like finally, you've been really exploring solitude lately. You said that recently. Can you kind of like touch on that, and then we'll do a little sign off. But I really want to touch on that because I think a lot of people are struggling in that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have been, oh my gosh, absolutely. It's my favorite thing right now. So I have been single for the last year, and like I've dated, and like, you know, I'm fine. Like I have men, but like I'm mostly alone in my thoughts and with myself. And I've been really struggling with the idea of that. Like, why can't I just like be in a fulfilling relationship right now? And both of us are just like going in and conquering the world. Like, this is the idea that I want. And the more people that I listen to, that I look up to, and more poets that I read about their lives, about their philosophies, about their values, and the more that I dive into what puts a person into a creative state, the more that I realize this word kept popping up is solitude, being by yourself, cultivating your loneliness, not being afraid, really honoring that, not shying away when that feeling comes up, you know, not going on your phone and not going out and not seeking attention. And that's really, really, really difficult because we're, you know, we're social animals. We're social people. We really thrive on our social interactions, good social interactions. Oh my God, the type of social interactions that make you forget about your phone. We live for those.
I know.
So when I am in those moments where I'm like, well, I'm feeling really alone tonight and I'm feeling really disconnected, I try to just, I acknowledge it and I'm trying to honor it and I'm trying to be okay and be better at that it's okay to reach out, but it's also okay for me to sit and to just know that I'm going to survive this. I'm going to get through this loneliness. I don't know what it is. I don't know why this seems to be a part of the human condition, but it does. And I want to make sure that I get good at it. And so I've been doing more trips by myself. I've just been trying to just dive into more activities, more solo activities, being hyper independent, and also being able to reach out and be part of my community and everything. But trying to ask myself, why does this keep popping up? What about it? What about my life? Am I unfulfilled about? What is it that continues to put me in this state? And then trying to write from that, you know, trying to create art from that.
That's freaking awesome. Let this be a teaser to all that is Kenzie Brenna, because like this is
you're
you.
The best.
It's ridiculous. Like best. It's actually, and I have to say this because I'm sitting right in front of you. It's funny when you see you online, they're like so stunning, and then you see you in real life, and like I don't care if you're uncomfortable hearing this. Like you're like one of the most stunning humans in real life. You've got like your hair up in a scrunchie and like no makeup, and I'm obsessed with you.
I'm so happy to be here. Oh, I love you so much.
Where can everyone find you? What's the best place to kind of like tap into like your consciousness?
Yeah.
Because you have so much to offer this world.
Thank you. Girl, you're my favorite. You got to own it right now. You're my favorite. Thank you so much. Like everything likewise to you. On Instagram would be awesome. Come hang out. Come message me. Be part of the community. Reach out to other people that are commenting. That's another thing too, is that I know that you and I have really, really have our foot in a community.
Yes.
And I think community building is so important. And so people who are from Sarah's community, come over, like come chat with people in the comments, you know, just chat with me too, but chat with other people, you know, like make friends, make pen pals, like do that type of thing.
Oh, and it's so valuable. Exchange.
Yeah, it really, really, really is. And always reach out, you know, to me, to you, like, you know, I know you and
where
I
would we
so
be without Instagram? That's literally how we connected. We became community members together, kind of like coinciding with different messaging that kind of linked at the same times. And so cool.
Yeah.
Honestly, totally. Such an honor to sit here with you. I feel like we have a part two coming like in the future, because there's no way this is
like
the
tomorrow.
End. Yeah, I know. This is ridiculous. Like, let's just go sit in my car. Everyone go and check out Kenzie Brenna. It is K-E-N-Z-I-E-B-R-E-N-N-A.
I'll make sure that she's linked below as well in the comments. I'm not sure how to do that. I don't even know how to upload a podcast, we'll but I mean, it's figuring we'll figure out. It's happening. Okay. Thank we'll you finesse. So much for listening. Hope you enjoyed this podcast. And if you liked it, please make sure that you subscribe if that's a thing and comment if it's a thing and review it. I still don't even know. So just do all of those things for me. Awesome. Thanks.
Well, friends, thank you so much for tuning in and listening to today's episode. For more information on this episode, check out the show notes or find us on Instagram at The Papaya Podcast. And if you loved what you just listened to or know somebody who would, please share it. Simply screenshot today's episode in the podcast app and share it to your Instagram stories. And don't forget to tag us. Last but not least, if you'd like to lend your personal support to the podcast, take a moment and leave a review on iTunes. We would be oh so grateful. Tune in next week for a fresh new episode of the Papaya Podcast, and we'll see you then.